Hello, and welcome to the Golden Thread Conversations. I'm your host, Judy Murdoch, and our guest today is Rabbi Sarah Tasman. Rabbi Sarah Tasman is the founder of the Tasman Center for Jewish Creativity, which offers community classes and gatherings, private spiritual coaching, and lifestyle officiation. Rabbi Sarah specializes in leading experiential spirituality and Jewish mindfulness classes, providing opportunities for personal and professional development, and incorporating expressive modalities, including writing, yoga, art, and ritual. So I am so happy to, I'm really happy that you're here, Rabbi Sarah, and really excited to learn more about you and your work.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cool. So one of the questions, the very first question I have for you is, could you say a little bit more about how you define Jewish creativity? I have an intuitive love of that phrase, but I would also like to learn more about how do you hold that?
Absolutely. It's a phrase I love as well. And there's a few different ways that I like to think about what Jewish creativity means. In one way, it's a lens in which to view Judaism and Jewish practice and Jewish spirituality. It means valuing that Judaism has always been a creative endeavor. So it means seeing that there's been Jewish creativity and innovation woven throughout time, going all the way back to the Torah and our foundational texts and our foundational narratives, that creation and creativity has always been there, starting with, you know, sort of the creation story and God creating the world and and then creating humans, and that we're created in the image of God and that we're created to create. And we're right now actually in the Torah reading cycle in the Jewish year. We're in a story about building the tabernacle in the wilderness, that the Israelites were building it. And this was their most creative and successful endeavor. They each contributed their creative talents and skills and their unique offerings. Mm-hmm. And even throughout Jewish history, just seeing that Jewish ritual and Jewish liturgy and Judaic art and Jewish spiritual practice has always been something where we have valued the different voices and the different practices and the diversity that exists within Judaism. So it's really seeing all of that, holding all of that, valuing all of that, and letting that be something that is foundational for how we can think about Judaism. And the other aspect of it is really about personal practice, about beautifying our practice. One of my favorite Jewish values is called hidur mitzvah, which means beautifying the ritual object. Why we have so many different kinds of Seder plates for Passover and different kinds of talitot prayer shawls and different ketubas for Jewish marriage contracts. And so it's more than that. It's beautifying ritual. And it's also about beautifying our spiritual practice and beautifying our learning through creative expression. And all of those things really go into that one little phrase, Jewish creativity.
Wow. I really like that. I like all the aspects that you talked about with regard to Jewish creativity. When I looked at your website, one of the things that has come up to me, I am a Jewish woman and I am an artist. I'm a visual artist. And I did a program last year. The intention was to create ritual practice cards. And these were not, I wouldn't call them to be, they weren't specifically Jewish, but they incorporated Jewish prayers and blessings. So there was both an English version of the prayer or the, I'm not sure what I would call it. Maybe it was just an invitation at the beginning or end of the ritual. And I worked with Kohanet, some of the Kohanet actually on this. They were advisors for this. And As I began thinking about these cards and what I wanted them to be, I knew that I wanted to have an image on one side of the card that could be used as with help, like a meditation aid. It could just be something that the person doing the practice looks at, and the beauty of that image just makes them feel happy. You know, images, mm-hmm. just art is, yeah. so emotional. So I began to research, you know, if I did these images, well, how do I, you know, what do I do to make them Jewish, if you will? Mm-hmm. And somebody said, well, is there anything like Jewish art in the way that you might think about Japanese art or mm-hmm. Mexican folk art? There are so many different cultures who have an art form that you can look at it and you can say, yes, you know, that's definitely, that's from India for sure. And in my research, I learned that what the Jewish people have done in general, because the Jewish people have spent so much time in so many different places, they have tended to adapt whatever the art is of that particular region. And I was really happy to see that, because I thought, wow, that really frees me up then. Because anything I do, if I am doing something and it is symbolically honoring Judaism, then that works just fine. So it was really a lot of fun then to find, you know, kind of like both working with symbols that we associate with Judaism, but also having the freedom to use any kind of art that I wanted to. So it was really interesting. I hadn't had that experience, but I mentioned this to you because, you know, and in a way there isn't something that you can say, well, that's Jewish art. You know, like our culture doesn't really, like we don't own a particular art style.
Right. There are so many different kinds of Jewish art and Judaica art. And that gets back to that idea of sort of embracing the diversity, that right. the richness that's sort of embedded in Jewish art and in ritual objects, that there's so many different kinds of art, and that there's it's an opportunity to illuminate the meaning of either what the text is or what the idea behind the piece is or what it could be used for in terms of a spiritual practice, and bringing that to life and beautifying that, giving the person who's looking at it or utilizing it a way to enhance and deepen their practice. I think mm-hmm. it's such a beautiful concept, not only to look at something visually, but also to utilize it right. in a way. And that also enhances the beauty yeah. of it.
I think too, the Hebrew alphabet itself is beautiful. And I love yeah. the shapes and forms of it and yeah. all the things that you can do with it. And I've thought about doing another project I've considered is doing artwork using the, you know, each Hebrew character. Mm-hmm. And I haven't gotten to that one yet, but I think it would be a really fun project.
That sounds like a great project. And yeah. there's actually deep wisdom in and mystical meanings that so are much. You know, in each of the letters and in the way the letters are formed, and right. Such a deep and beautiful practice.
I wanted yeah. to ask you, Your place is called, you know, the Center for Jewish Creativity. And I was wondering, how does that manifest with your community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it manifests in a number of different ways. So in pretty much everything I do, I like to kind of take an interdisciplinary approach. And that comes from my background and my training, In undergrad, I have a degree from University of Michigan called Arts and Ideas in the Humanities. So I had a very interdisciplinary education and training. And in my rabbinical studies and becoming a yoga teacher and meditation teacher and really integrating different practices and different forms of embodied prayer and embodied movement and creative expression. So it sort of manifests itself in a workshop, for example, for a number of years now, I've been leading a monthly workshop for Rosh Chodesh called the Aligned Series. And each month there's a program in which we gather to learn about and explore the themes of that month and that season, where we are in the year cycle, what's going on in our own lives. And there's always some aspect of a creative practice, either a visual art project that we do, or a coaching or mindfulness exercise that people can use any materials they want to utilize. And then there's a creative ritual. So that's like an example of how this sort of comes together in a workshop, or maybe in a retreat where we have a longer time to really explore. And there's time for learning and personal reflection and time for creating and a time for sharing and reflecting on the art practice in the learning. Sometimes it comes through in the creation of a ritual. I also work with people going through different life transitions.
Right.
And we'll create a ritual together, and I'll help them think about utilizing different elements, maybe water or fire or poetry, or bringing in different elements, and they get to bring different parts of themselves into what we're creating together. And so that's it might really come through in that way.
Yeah.
Those are just some examples.
So like, we just finished Purim, because I know you were, I think, out of your office for a little bit for that. Yeah. So did you do anything special for Purim? Because Purim's kind of a, you know, it's like a funny holiday in that, on the one hand, you know, it's got like a really serious, like the story is really serious. It's not, you know, it's not like a particularly lighthearted story. But at the same time, it's like also this holiday where people really have fun. And, you know, they bake, and they, when I was a kid, we used to actually do like a little, like the little Purim play. So we actually like did this little play with the songs and people acting out the different roles and stuff like that. So I was like curious, like, what did you do anything in particular for Purim this year?
So this year I joined over Zoom my rabbinical school. They always do a Purim service and Megillah reading and spiel, where each class, you know, has a different skit that they put on. And as an alumni, I was just there to participate, you know, just to participate sort of in the audience. But in the past, there's something I've done that I really loved. When I lived in New Haven, Connecticut, my husband was in business school, and he had a classmate who was in business school with him, but she was also a photographer. And she did this amazing project for the School of Management at Yale that I asked her to come and do for a group of women who are part of a Rosh Chodesh group that I was leading. And she did these dual identity portraits where she took two portraits and in each one, the subject would sort of have an outfit on or holding objects that were part of a particular identity that they held. And then she did a second portrait where they had a different outfit on with a different aspect of their identity. And then she spliced the two photos together. So it was one picture. Cool. And I thought, this is amazing to connect with Purim. Because on Purim, we have so many different aspects of our identity that we can think about, especially in the Purim story, different aspects of Queen Esther's identity and what parts of her identity are hidden and what parts of herself she reveals and how does she come into the fullness of herself, you know, by the end of the story. And so I had my husband's classmate, Alina Vorobejczyk, this photographer, come to our Rosh Chodesh group, and she did this these portraits for us. Mm. And so the portrait that I of me that I have, one half of me is in my yoga teacher sort of embodied practice identity. And then the other half of me has on my my tallis, my prayer shawl, and my kippah, my head covering. And I have some, you know, my rabbinic books where I'm sort of in my kind of more formal rabbinic role. And to have these two in one image was this incredible experience to really feel like these two parts of myself are not separate. These are really two integrated parts of who I am. And I really do feel like these are two parts of who I am that are integrated, but other people don't always see that. Sometimes it's hard for people to imagine, oh, a rabbi, also a yoga teacher.
Yeah, totally.
And to have this visual representation that embraced both sides of me was really incredible. And that's something I love. And I would love to do that again, actually. There's a Jewish organization called At the Well Project that provides a monthly moon manual for each month in the Jewish calendar. And the Adar manual for the Hebrew month in which Purim occurs includes that activity. So if other people wanted to do it on their own, they could do it. And I think that would be amazing for people to do during during Purim or anytime during the month of Adar.
Yeah, I think that's like, I like how it just touches on so many different like symbols and concepts, you know. It's that's the thing I like about creativity in general, is I like the connectedness aspect of creativity, that you can all, like, there's room to bring so many different things in and create something beautiful.
Exactly. And I think that's a huge thing I want to underscore, is that for me, it all comes back to helping people connect personally to Judaism or Jewish practice or themselves or whatever we're learning about or experiencing, because I want people to have a deeper connection with themselves and with the tradition and with their own practice. And so to me, it's not just art for art's sake, but it's art that is a tool for reflection, art as a tool for expression, for healing, for learning, for deepening our knowledge of ourselves and how we want to be in the world. And so a lot of the teaching that I've done recently has started to integrate Jewish mindfulness as a way to have more personal and professional development.
Can you speak a bit more to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So a lot of the practices that I've really honed over the last number of years combine maybe some coaching exercises with exercises for spiritual reflection. And for an example, In the Jewish calendar, the month leading up to the Jewish New Year, the month before Rosh Hashanah, is called Elul. And it's a time that's supposed to be set aside for reflection on the past year and literally an accounting of your soul and setting intentions and goals for the year to come. And that is a really ambitious task.
For everyone. I agree.
It can feel totally overwhelming for someone who's like, I don't even know where to start. There's so much going on and I don't have time to do that. And so a lot of what I do is really making things very accessible and manageable to do. So I did this class with a friend of mine who's a coach, a professional coach, and we did a class called Mastering Change. It was a 3-part series before Rosh Hashanah, for people to utilize some of the tools and techniques that we both brought to the table to do that kind of reflection work. So having a space to really think about specifically, you know, what happened in this past year? How do I make sense of what happened in the past year? What did I accomplish? What do I feel successful about? What feels like it is unfinished? What feels like it needs more work? Just giving people that space to think about that. And then in a second session, helping people think about how do you actually set an intention? How do you set how do you set a specific goal in mind for the year or for this season or just for the next month? Mm-hmm. And then in the third session, it was really looking very specifically at the things that they wanted to integrate into their lives in the coming year, things they wanted to let go of in the past year that they didn't want to use their time on. And how do you really prioritize the things that are really most important to you? And so it was a very spiritual workshop, but it was also very, very practical.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I like the thing that I like about what you said with setting intentions is that my background is in business. And so I'm very, very, I know a lot about goal setting and, setting and working towards complex goals where you have multiple people involved. And it works relatively well in business because, you're getting paid, right? You're getting paid to achieve that goal, or at least at the very least, it's pretty well understood that you're being paid to contribute. You may not love the goal, but that's your job. That is the way your job is defined. And it is far more difficult to set an intention or a goal which is personal. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of for myself, actually doing more creative work, painting. Yeah. Was one of the goals I did last year. So that was one of the things I did. And it was it's a very attractive goal, but it's also a scary goal. Mm-hmm. Because I haven't painted for quite a long time. And my, inner perfectionist was rearing up and telling me, all these, just like making me not want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Our inner critic
can
come up. Yes. when we allow ourselves to be creative, it's also very vulnerable. And our inner critic wants to sort of protect ourselves from that. And so how do we kind of let go of that in order to give ourselves the space and freedom
to create? Yeah. And in my particular case, I found a book that was painting watercolor postcards. And I really loved what the author, I loved what she had created. She just came up with so many really cool little images and different ways to compose these images. And so that gave me enough structure so that I could do it. And, and sometimes that's how I have to do something. I was thinking too that with what you and that coach did, it seems like a big piece of it is really creating a safe space for people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that they can feel vulnerable. And I know so many times people have said, just do some ugly art. To be perfectly honest with you, there are just parts in my wiring that just don't want to create ugly art. And I have a lot of resistance to it. Mm-hmm. But my point is just, I think a lot of things come up in us that make it difficult, make creativity really challenging.
Yeah, I think a lot of what I do is giving people permission to not worry about what it looks like, to not worry about what the art looks like or what the final product looks like. It doesn't have to look like a beautiful, polished piece of fine art, that's going to go in a museum. For a lot of the art that I do and that I help people do, it's not about that. It's more about the process. And so even just helping people unlearn what they were taught, many people feel like they were taught that they were not a good artist or they're good at making art. And so like you said, just giving people permission to make ugly art or not even to worry, not even to assign a value. Is it ugly or beautiful, not even worrying about that, just allowing themselves the space to manifest something and create something with their hands and to, you know, almost get out of your mind and into your heart space and just to express yourself in a different way than you might normally express yourself can be really valuable.
I was thinking too about what you had said about doing this end of the year reflection. And I was thinking, although the Jewish New Year, you know, the Jewish year overlaps with the, is it the Julian calendar? I kind of get them mixed up, but.
Yeah, the Gregorian calendar is the January 1st New Year.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so the Jewish year is different. Yeah. But it did, you know, greatly overlap 2020 and COVID. And that was such, I mean, I, as you were speaking, I was thinking to myself, you know, it'd be kind of nice to, even at this time, be able to look back in a, I think, like a more meaningful, mindful way and think about how has COVID changed me? What good has come out of it?
Right.
Because it's a rough year for, I think, everybody.
100%. And especially now that it's, you know, the year anniversary, and I mentioned Purim earlier, and for many people in the Jewish community, Purim last year was sort of the last holiday that was spent in community for many people. I was pregnant at the time, so I didn't go to Purim in person. I was like, I'm just going to do Zoom. I'm going to live stream Purim, because I'm not going anywhere, you know, because it was in the very early, early days of COVID.
Yeah.
And, you know, but for many people, it's the last time they were together in community. And so to have had Purim again last week, it was like, wow, it's been a year and we're still in this.
Yeah.
And that's a real live place for a lot of people. This year, I for the last number of years, I've been doing a New Year's Day workshop on the secular New Year. And usually what I teach is that it's not a time for setting new resolutions. Winter is actually the worst time to set a new resolution.
That's
because
a good point.
The season of winter wants us to like go inward and rest and hibernate and be cozy and not create, you know, brand new resolutions, you know. And so you know, a lot of people were so happy and relieved that 2020 was over, but nothing really changed, you know, on January 1st, 2021. So it's sort of like, how do we sit with both the sort of like excitement and relief made it into a new calendar year with knowing that things aren't really different. And this isn't really a time to make big changes in our life because of the season and because
we're
still in the midst of the pandemic. And, you know, so I did another exercise where I had people meet their future self in a guided meditation and then do some writing and create some art around that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a way to kind of like get out of the space that we're in right now and kind of move yourself forward, but then come back to where you are now with maybe some renewed inspiration or help or support from your future self. And that was really special. It was really fun.
It sounds really cool. What kinds of art do you like to do? What forms of expression do you?
My favorite medium is probably collage and mixed media. I have a practice where I do these torn paper collages of trees. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a motif that I kind of return to almost as a meditation. Mm-hmm. And the collages almost kind of look like torn paper mosaic. So that's something I love doing. I have pretty much my whole life always had a journal and had art supplies nearby. And I would kind of draw or put things in or collage things into the pages of the journal to kind of keep everything in one place. And so that's like another practice.
That's a great practice. I love that.
Yeah. And I just have a box of journal that I've had, you know, throughout my life. And that's a practice I really enjoy.
That's really cool. It's something now too that you can share with your child one day.
Yeah. Yeah,
You know, that's it's like a beautiful thing to be able to pass on. So as you know, it's looking forward. It's funny, you know, people keep saying, well, can we go back to normal? Like, are we going to go back to normal when everybody's vaccinated? And you shook your head and,
we're not going back to normal.
Right. And I have a really similar feeling too of sort of like, you know, I just think that there were gifts that we received from the pandemic that, I mean, just the allow now, and now not everybody will agree with me that this is a gift, but I think not having to go to work every day, that's a gift. You know, when you shake your head though, like what comes to you as you think about, well, we're not going to go back to normal. And so what do you imagine things will look like?
I think we're going toward a new normal. And I think every generation goes through some kind of experience that completely changes and disrupts their sense of what is normal. And so to me, in the grand scheme of history, and especially in Jewish history, this isn't new.
Right, for sure.
You know, and so that's kind of the way that I think about it conceptually. I think as we move forward, I think a lot of stuff's going to stay on Zoom. I would say that moving my programs from in-person to Zoom has been an incredible experience. And I'm going to keep that because, you know, when I used to only do events in person, it was really only people who were local who could come, who could attend, you know, people who lived in the DC area. And once I moved everything to Zoom, I started having participants from California and Arizona and Kentucky, and you know, people from all over, you know, were able to participate. And I think that's been a huge impact. I was already doing some of my counseling that I do and coaching that I do and working with couples and private clients. I was already doing some of that over Zoom, but now that all my meetings are essentially are over Zoom, it's been a lot easier for people because they don't have to travel to get to me. You know, I used to have wedding couples come over to my home to for our premarital counseling meetings and wedding planning, which was lovely to have them come over. But now it saves them like an hour or 45 minutes of trying to get to my house and then getting home. So that's been really easy for people. And I think that will, I'll continue to be able to do that, especially for couples that maybe they live an hour away or something like that. I hope that I'll be able to do Shabbat dinners together in person. Usually I would have people come over and help us build our sukkah in the fall during the holiday of Sukkot and help us decorate and have a meal with us. Those things I do hope that we will be able to bring back. It would be very sad if we couldn't bring back any of those things in person, but I think the Zoom stuff will stay on Zoom. And I think that the innovation and creativity that's come out of the pandemic for the Jewish community, I saw more innovation and creativity this year at High Holidays and what communities are trying to do to really make Jewish supplemental education more exciting and more accessible and so much amazing things have come out of this pandemic that that might not have come out sooner or might not have come out otherwise.
I agree. I think human beings are really amazing at how adaptable and creative we can be in the face of adversity. And I think that this last year has been a really good example of that.
Absolutely.
I was thinking too, for myself at least, another thing that the pandemic brought forth for me was it really kind of put inequities in a much like sharper light. And, you know, like, I think it's always good to shine a light on problems, because if you don't see the problem, you aren't going to have, you know, you're not probably, you won't care much about it. You just think it's not there, right? Mm-hmm. And this last year has really troubled me personally in seeing how, you know, sort of the inequities in terms of who has been affected by the pandemic, seeing how hard it has been on working women, for example, mm-hmm. you know, and that type of thing, like, that's not something I don't want to go back to that.
Right.
Now that, you know, now it's like being on a tidal plane, you know, and when you're in low tide, you see all the ucky stuff there. And I feel like I don't want things to go back to normal. And for us to just think, oh, well, you know, we can just go back to people getting their jobs back in hospitality and that type of thing. And I don't think I can go back anymore now that I've kind of seen that. I don't know specifically what that has to do with your work, but it is something that I feel troubled by, and I can't put it out of my mind now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's something I've been thinking about a lot as well, and how the pandemic really brought things that were just bubbling under the surface, really, they exploded over. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of my work, you know, helping the people that I work with sort of navigate all of this
and
supporting them, that has definitely been huge. And in terms of, you know, the gender equity piece and the intersectionality piece of this, so many things have come to the forefront this year in terms of wanting to make the Jewish community a place where people of color are more visible and their voices are lifted up more, and mm-hmm. You know, people on the gender spectrum and mm-hmm. of different gender identity, making sure that mm-hmm. you know, that the reality is that the Jewish community is really, really diverse. It doesn't just right. look like one thing.
Right.
And so during this pandemic, there's been really an upsurge in making more voices heard, making more conversations about gender equity. Mm-hmm. Because the pandemic has so disproportionately affected working women and working mothers,
right.
and how many women have had to step back from the workforce yep. in order to provide childcare,
yep.
and how, you know, that has a huge global impact for women, and that's going to continue to impact women. And there was already a huge gender wage gap, and that's going to just kind of, I think, exacerbate it.
Yeah, for sure.
And continue to make it difficult for women. And it just revealed a lot more gender inequities than I think people mm-hmm. People didn't really want to see or deal with before are now much more visible. And
I agree.
And like you said, I hope that making these things more visible will actually hopefully make these situations improved in the future going forward.
Yeah.
That we don't go back to what it was like before.
Right.
But we go towards something that's improved.
Yeah, I hope so. I was heartened to hear our new president talk about you know, like just access to childcare, for example,
right.
which is like, man, that is just, I mean, even for myself, when my son was small, you know, childcare was just always such a, I don't know, like an 800-pound gorilla in the room, like because you just always worry so much about it, you know, even though we had access to some, you know, really, you know, good quality childcare options in our community, and we were really lucky, but it's still like one of those things as the mother, like you worry so much about that because it's mm-hmm. your child and where yeah. they are all day, and you want them to be loved, and yeah. you know, so it's mm-hmm. I my fingers are crossed that we as a society will do better with that.
I had a baby during the pandemic, and my son is almost 6 months old, and we have to figure out
some a lot of decisions.
Childcare, since my husband and I are both working, and it is a huge question of
how do we
do this? What do we do about it? And especially in a pandemic, how do we do it in a way that's safe? And so that's a huge, very live question for me right now as well.
I still remember, you know, I still remember when I was, you know, kind of just struggling through those questions, and there's no like one right way to do it. That's the other thing, you know, it's very, you know, family by family. So just in closing, I wanted to ask you again, sort of looking forward, do you have any big plans? What are you kind of excited about in the future?
I have so many things I'm excited about. So I have some short-term things that are coming up and some longer-term things I've been working on. What I'm working on right now is a couple of projects. The Tasman Center for Jewish Creativity is putting together an art haggadah, and we are collecting artwork that is going to be put together on haggadot.com, and we're going to make this available to people to be able to utilize to beautify their Passover experience, and to also lift up artists and Jewish artists of color and LGBTQ, non-binary artists and women artists and everything like that. So we're hoping that it's going to be really, really diverse. We're still taking art submissions. So if anyone hears this, if it's by the time people hear this, we are still taking submissions right now. And then I'm working on a program after Passover, from the second night of Passover for 7 weeks until the holiday of Shavuot, is a time in the Jewish calendar called Counting the Omer. Historically, biblically, it was a barley harvest time, but it's also a time for a mystical practice of personal reflection and personal study, where each week is associated with a different mystical attribute or divine attribute. And I am working on an asynchronous class that people will be able to take. So each week there will be a guided meditation and reflection prompts, and then participants will be invited to do creative writing or art making in response to the reflection questions for that week that are associated with that mystical attribute. And participants will get the recording at, you know, on a certain day, but they'll be, it won't be live, so they can do it at any time that they want to during the week, and be able to post reflections and have other people in the class be able to respond as well. So that's in the works too. So stay tuned. That's short. The information will be coming out shortly about that. And then long term, I'm just working on having more resources available for people, more opportunities for people, making some more courses that people can take. Up until now, almost all the events that I did were at a specific date and time. So making more, I want to make some more classes and opportunities that people can do on their own that aren't at a specific date or time, you know, an asynchronous class. So working on a lot of different things like that. And I would love to come to more communities to teach and to lead programs and retreats as well. It's something I love doing. So if anyone hears this and wants to be in touch with me, and I'd love to talk to anyone who might be interested in bringing some more creativity and spiritual expression and mindfulness to their communities.
That sounds really nice. That's a really great invitation. The last thing I just wanted to tell you was, you have brought up diversity a number of times as we've been talking, and that heartens me. You know, that makes me feel really good, because when I grew up, and it wasn't that long ago, but you know, there was, I think, a sense of Judaism and Jewish people and the way we practice our, you know, the way we practice our faith, there wasn't a whole lot of room in there. It was pretty narrow. It was men in charge. It was, and, you know, and I want to say too, that I grew up in a Reform synagogue. We had a rabbi who was very intellectual and very, you know, I would say quite open-minded in some ways. But oddly, when I guess graduated or became confirmed, it was, I was like, I think 16. And I remember the rabbi said to me that I've always been a rebel. And I, you know, like that was like the oddest thing to hear coming out of this guy's mouth. And he said that because I did not get bat mitzvahed. I didn't like Hebrew class, and I pushed back and said, I'm just not going to do this. And my parents let me. But that's just an example of how, you know, I never thought of myself as a rebel. And I was like stunned to hear the rabbi even say that to me. So I feel like happy and excited and just so encouraged by like there's just a sense of how you are opening up your community and you're just creating so many opportunities, I think, for people to get to know themselves and grow. And it's so affirming.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
This was so wonderful and lovely to have this conversation. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.